Authors discontented with their publishing deals are nothing new. Mark Twain enjoyed jabbing at publishers like a kid tossing stones. He once said that robbery of a publisher wasn't a crime and was even rewarded in heaven with two halos. Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. This week, a particularly discontented author didn't like the way the game was being played, so he picked up his manuscript and went home. Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer, has the details from Cleveland, where he's a special guest of Overdrive's DigiPalooza gathering. Welcome back to Beyond the Book, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
Well, we speak to you every Friday, and last Friday we talked about the Authors Guild and their proposal to shorten contracts. And this week we learn about an author who has proactively shortened his own deal. In fact, he ended it. So tell us why Steve Hamilton took away his manuscript from St. Martin's and ended a book deal before it really began.
Yeah, so fascinating news this week as we learned on Tuesday that St. Martin's imprint Minotaur was canceling Edgar Award-winning author Steve Hamilton's newest novel slated for October. It's entitled The Second Life of Nick Mason. But we learned later this week, in fact, that it was Hamilton and his agent, Shane Salerno, who had actually moved to end the deal with St. Martin's Press. And I think it's a pretty extraordinary move. So why did Hamilton pull the book? Inquiring minds want to know. Because he believes that St. Martin's Press was basically lying about its marketing efforts. On the galley version of the book, which PW gave a star review, by the way, St. Martin's Press had said that it was planning a 75,000 copy first print and a national author tour for Hamilton, as well as a national ad campaign for the book. Hamilton, however, said none of those claims are true. There was no national campaign, he told PW, none at all. And he said that the catastrophe that would have transpired for a book with extraordinary advance reviews would have been unfair to me, to my book, and to every bookseller. Now, as you mentioned in your introduction, it's no secret that authors and publishers frequently clash, sometimes end deals, and marketing is usually at the heart of those clashes and how well a book is selling, but rarely do they end in this fashion, with just weeks before a book is set to go to press, Hamilton pulling his deal. It's just amazing to me that he would do this. He actually paid back his advances along with delivery and acceptance fees on the first book, and Hamilton and his agent are now fielding offers, or hoping to field offers, I should say, on the print rights for The Second Life of Nick Mason, as well as film rights for the book. So an extraordinary circumstance this week.
Well, indeed it is. And, you know, I may have said this on the program at least once before, maybe a dozen times before. Scratch an author and you find someone who's got a problem with his publisher. And so this isn't really all uncommon, but the drastic moves that Steve has made really is striking. What do you think happens next?
You know, I just don't know. But, you know, a few observations that I would make is that it really does sound like quite a risk to me. Is another publisher going to step up and pay what Hamilton just paid back to St. Martin's Press, potentially more? Will any new marketing plan look any better to Hamilton? Will publishers shy away from an author that clearly has an opinion about what his marketing plan should look like? And I wonder if St. Martin's plan ultimately is going to really be any different than what another publisher would offer. It remains to be seen, but obviously Hamilton is betting that with such great advance reviews that he can probably do better elsewhere. In the end, Hamilton told PW that he wants to work with a publisher who's passionate about his work, not just paid for it, but is passionate about it, and who has a real plan for reaching the widest possible audience. And apparently, he didn't feel like any of that was in place at St. Martin's Press, or that it ever would be. But I have to say, you know, once the book gets into the market, that's usually the time that authors apply pressure. And I have two questions going forward. And that is, I wonder what Amazon is going to do here. What if Amazon emerges as the top bidder for his books and puts together a marketing plan, which they have the wherewithal to do, that just wows him? That would be quite a story if that was to happen. And second, as we discussed last week, if the two sides had negotiated a shorter deal, say a 2 or 3 year deal for first publication, that would put more pressure on publishers to sell a lot of books and come up with a marketing plan right out of the gate. So fascinating stuff here for sure, and a story to watch, absolutely.
Well, indeed. And a story that you've watched over the years, Andrew, is libraries and ebooks. And you're there in Cleveland for Overdrive's DigiPalooza conference. You, in fact, addressed the conference and gave them your thoughts about this very question of getting ebooks into the hands of library patrons. And how's it been going?
it's been really, really great. And I want to thank Overdrive for the invitation, and to my fellow opening session speakers, who are Meredith Schwartz from Library Journal, and Sari Feldman, who's director of the Cuyahoga Libraries. And actually, I'm a guest of Sari's in her library today. And I've had a great time listening to staff talk about all their tremendous programs and all the things they do to really market reading. And also, I've been learning a lot about how they're handling digital reading. So in my talk, I pushed a little bit provocatively, I'll admit, for more experimentation in the ebook market. And I asked, I wondered what people thought about a move to add more access models and to sort of take us away from this analog one user, one copy e-lending model that's sort of dominating out there. And I was really amazed by the response. So there was probably over 1,000 librarians in the audience, and I didn't get to talk to all of them, but a lot of them came up to me and they were really interested in trying new models. And a lot of them had data and ideas about what models might work well. And I look forward to sharing some of those in my column in PW next week. But once again, I just want to say thanks to Overdrive, a big shout out to them for hosting such a great event. And thanks to all the engaged librarians that were there and listened to me this morning and offered their opinions. And also, I'd like to thank the Republican Party for having their debates here, because it made sure that I wasn't the only guy with crazy hair in Cleveland bloviating on a stage this week.
Well, in fact, I'm not sure that it makes too crazy. There might be many more than just the two of you on a stage, particularly there in Cleveland. And on the ebook issue, Andrew, the consumer side, we've got some figures this week from the Association of American Publishers. And as we discussed 2 weeks ago, they show a somewhat disturbing trend.
Yeah, that's right. The latest sales figures for AAP show that ebooks fell once again. This was the data for April, and they show that both adult and children's ebook sales fell. That's now the fourth month in a row to post a decline in ebook sales. And I think this is probably true for many reasons. The lack of big name authors probably is one of them. So it will be interesting to see what the data shows for ebook sales once it factors in new books by E.L. James and Harper Lee. We haven't exactly got there with the data yet. But regardless, a fourth straight month decline in ebook sales for a sector that was once growing, not too long ago, was growing by triple digits, I think it has to be a concern. And there was another number this week from Simon & Schuster, which posted its quarterly numbers that echoed another trend that we've talked about on this show. Sales revenue fell for the quarter, but profits went up. And this also despite a decline in ebook sales for Simon & Schuster. So I think what that tells us is that clearly ebook margins are pretty good. If you're selling less and making more money, you got some pretty good margins there. And to bring up the Authors Guild once again, I am sure they are paying attention to these numbers and will probably use this as ammunition in their bid to punch up ebook royalties. So from, libraries in Cleveland to numbers reported from New York, some pretty interesting stuff on the ebook front this week.
Well, indeed. And coming to us this week from Cleveland, where he's a guest of the Overdrive Digipalooza Conference, Andrew Albanese, senior writer for Publishers Weekly, and I'm very glad I don't have to say that more than once a week. Anyway, you take care, Andrew. As always, it's a pleasure having you join us.
My pleasure, as always.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as images, movies, and television shows. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, find us on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at our website, beyondthebook.com. Our engineer and co-producer is Jeremy Briskey of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.